This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle, and on 710sports.com. Whew. What a weekend, man. What a fascinating, bizarre, cool, interesting weekend. We're going to spend a lot of time on Earl Thomas today. I saw three general opinions on Earl Thomas, Brock. Two of them make perfect sense. One of them does not make any sense to me. We'll go through those here in just a moment. Let's start, first of all. It's a good win. And I know there'll be people say it was not, that it was ugly, that it was gross, that obviously people got hurt and those things stink. But that's a really important good win for a team that needed it. You win it, you're 2-2, yep. And all of a sudden you can afford to lose to the Rams this next weekend, or you can beat them and set yourself up even better. But if you lose that game and you're 1-3 facing the Rams, gosh, you're in a just completely different spot for the rest of the season.
Got to win. You got to win in your division. You got to win on the road. Something that they put themselves in position to do the first couple weeks of the season, and they couldn't get it done. And with the game on the line and a game tied and you needing to drive and needing the ability to finish, you ran the ball. Oh, my gosh, you ran the ball. First down of that drive, you ran the ball for 15 yards. And you go down, and Sebastian kicks a 52-yarder, and you find a way to win. This Seahawk team, I'm going to tell you right now, for all of you Twitter stars out there and all you social media savants that want to nitpick everything, this Seahawks team in 2018 will not win with style points. So just get over yourself and just get that out of your mind. Get that out your mouth and out your mind. There will be no pretty, stylistic, looks like everybody else kind of win for this group in 2018. If they're going to win, it's going to be gritty. It's going to be hard fought. It's going to be one in the fourth quarter. And my goodness gracious, if you run for 171 yards in this league and you don't turn the ball over, you've got a pretty good chance of coming out on the right end of it.
And certainly when you got a kicker who doesn't mind missing a couple kicks early and just draining one late, that's kind of what Seabass can do for you. So you can call it ugly. That's fine. I'll call that a pretty good win for the Seahawks. Okay, on to Earl. Three general forms of takes that I saw on Earl.
Got 90 seconds.
Hold on, that was 2 minutes. Okay. That was a good win. There's our 120 seconds for mandated to do that.
Dude flipped off the Seahawks sideline on his way out the door. What, you want us to wait? We should do this at like 8:30 today? Come on, man.
I thought at least you'd complain about the timeouts first.
Get that win out your mouth and talk about Earl.
I promise you, Kyle, my first takeaway at 8 o'clock will be about the timeouts. Okay. I can fully guarantee at 8 o'clock it will be number one about the timeouts. I saw three general takes on Earl Thomas. One, this is why Earl wanted to get paid. Totally agree. This is absolutely why Earl wanted to get paid, and that's why I actually understand and even approve of his anger, and I'm not mad at him for flipping off anybody. I think I understand where he's coming from. Number two, this is why the Seahawks didn't want to pay Earl. That also makes sense. Of course the Seahawks didn't want to pay Earl a third contract, knowing that he'd already broken this same leg once and didn't have surgery on it. And by the way, if he had, it might not have broken yesterday because there'd been a rod in it. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. It is broken, and the Seahawks are saying this is why we didn't want to sign this guy long term. Okay, fine. Yeah. Those two takes both make sense to me. The take that does not is the Seahawks should have signed Earl.
Yeah.
And I saw a bunch of it. I saw it from Frank Clark. Love you, dog. This is stupid, man. No, it's not. Like this is what happens. From Ray Roberts, guy I love and respect. Earl deserved a new contract. He earned it, proved it, and was rated as the top free safety so far this year. Should have paid the man. Period. Man, I don't know that I believe that one either, man. I'm sorry. The Seahawks didn't sign Earl because of this risk.
Yeah.
They did not want to assume this risk the way they did with Cam, the way they did with Richard, the way they did with Bennett.
Marshawn.
The way they did with Marshawn. They were unwilling to assume the risk on a third contract, and that stinks for Earl Thomas, but this was the right move and the right decision for the Seattle Seahawks franchise.
Correct. Correct.
And yesterday shows why.
1,000% agree. 1,000% agree.
And look, I can feel bad for Earl. And honestly, I do. I feel bad for Earl. I understand why he's mad. I understand that in a moment like that of high emotion that you might do something that either you regret later or at the very least, maybe it's not the public image you want out there about yourself. Mm-hmm. I can understand all that. I've been mad. I've seen red. I've gotten angry and said and done things that I've regretted, absolutely, and I'm not going to kill Earl for it, not for one second. But if you think that the Seahawks' job is to make sure Earl's taken care of beyond the $56 million he's already made, that is not their job. And me as a fan of the team, my job is not to put Earl Thomas before the team and say, oh boy, I really wish he'd gotten his long-term deal. What do I care?
Yeah.
Guy's made $56 million, and at this point, unfortunately, his usefulness to me, a Seahawks fan, is now probably more in the past than in the future. And my interest in a Seahawks fan is in them being good as soon as possible and getting over whatever Earl was to find the next guy. I feel bad for the guy. I hope he's able to go out in free agency, whether they franchise him or however that plays out, and make back some money and have a great rest of his career. But in all likelihood, it's not going to be here.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like the Seahawks owed him anything beyond what they gave him.
No, they did not. And I hate that the last image I will have of Earl Thomas in a Seahawk uniform is a middle finger he gave to the coach and organization that built the LLB. However, that's exactly what this culture empowered and built for much, much better than ultimately worse. But in the end, that's the lasting image. That's the lasting image as his leg is
that's
broke.
What you're going to see?
That's a lasting image that so many, Mike, are going to see that really? As he's carted off the field. Really, because it's the only time it has ever happened in NFL history where I've seen a player get carted off the field, right? And it's awful and it's terrible. And he's given the, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's been other examples of that I have missed in my 40 years of watching football. But when was the last time you watched a player give the bird to his teammates, to his coach, to the organization? He's doing it to the organization.
I've never seen that.
You've never seen it. So we can all say, not a big deal with Marshawn flipping the sidelines off. Not a big deal that Earl. That Richard throws his team and coach under the bus. Not a big deal that Earl flips off the sideline. All of those things are the byproduct, the trade-off of a culture that you empowered. And let me just say this clear. I'll say it again. For much, much better. For much, much better than ultimately worse. For much, much better in two Super Bowls and a Super Bowl ring.
That's
for
right.
Much, much better in all of these wins. So that culture, and while I will nitpick it, and while it will always bother me that the team is not first, even though that's your rule, it is for much, much better. But no, I'm sorry. That will be the lasting
image. So you're
telling
me in 10 years, when you think of Earl Thomas the Seahawk, the first thing you'll think of is him
probably
leaving the sideline?
Yeah, probably.
Then that's on you, man.
Okay.
I won't.
Because it's that distinct and that unique.
I won't think of that at all.
That distinct and that unique and that different.
I'll be thinking of him punching the ball out at the goal line twice. I'll be thinking of how fast he was sideline to sideline. I'll be thinking of him winning a Super Bowl. I'll be thinking of him being weird and riding a horse to things and wearing a crown and all the other weird Earl things. I'll be thinking of his laugh and the strange quotes we have and this. Like, I'm sorry, man.
That's fine. That's you.
May be his last, but it's, yep. I think that's on you.
Well, okay.
Go out there and just let love love.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he also held out. He also was all about him. He also wanted to make this just about Earl Thomas and not about the team and not about the organization. And ultimately, his lasting image was just right to the team.
Now, I do think there is something bigger going on here. And we'll take your calls unless you guys want to jump in. We have 7:30 kind of opened up for this. 206-421-3776. Your thoughts on what happened yesterday with Earl Thomas and the way he exited the field.
Stage right.
This is where the league is going. Players are more and more upset about the awful collective bargaining agreement. They're trying as many new techniques as they can to try to get paid. The league does not want to reward its best players because of this weird market that seems to only go by position where, I'm sorry, Earl, you're a safety. You're only worth 9, not 13. Why? Because that's what the market says in a really weird, made-up market. And in a culture where the differences between the players, Brock, and management slash ownership are more and more obvious, man, that tension is going, I think, well beyond where it was at a healthy level and is becoming unhealthy. And I get why Earl's mad. I get why Frank Clark is mad, why Richard Sherman is mad, why Malcolm Jenkins yesterday says, praying for you, Earl. We risk it all for our teammates and our fans with little reciprocity. At the end of the day, the players shoulder all the risk and the scrutiny. I wish the best for one of the best in this generation. I don't agree with him, but I understand where this thing is going, and I don't know how any of it's going to get resolved. That divide and gulf between the players and the ownership, not in Seattle, but in the NFL, is growing wider by the day.
Well, it's on their leadership to go figure out then, okay, because these guys are making more money. I guess at the very top, I don't know if an Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack or any of those guys, Mike, that just got paid more money than anybody in the history of the league, still feel that same way, but they got a lot as a league, as a players union, to figure out moving forward.
7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, Sebastian Janikowski was good from 52 yards out as time expired to give the Seahawks a 20-17 win over the Cardinals. They had it all the way. I mean, they were 0 for 10 on third down, 0 for 9 plus the spike on third down at the end. But hey, it's okay. You find ways to win, especially on the road. Mike Davis was probably the best player on the field yesterday. 21 carries for 101 yards. Second straight week, the Seahawks have had a 100-yard rusher. Two touchdowns for Mike Davis as well. One of them led by lead blocker Russell Wilson, Brock, who probably blocked better yesterday than in any day of his entire career. It's a big win for them. It came at a cost, obviously. We'll get to that in a moment. But to be a 2-2 now is a huge accomplishment for where this team started.
Yeah, the points on the scoreboard are nowhere near 53, but that's the formula. The number of rushing attempts, how many times you can run the football, and the number of completions, you add those two things together. That's the number that Pete and that's the number that Brian Schottenheimer are concerned about. That's the formula. That completes the circle. That allows you to possess the ball. Even if you do go 0-for on third down, you still found a way to possess the ball. You owned and dominated that third quarter of play, and you did it on the ground. You did it with a career day and back-to-back weeks with 100-yard rushers. You did it with Mike Davis being at his very best, and you did it with a pretty darn creative run game that had a mix of just about everything involved, and ultimately you got to 2-2, which is really all that matters.
Except on third and short.
True.
We don't run on third and short. Just be clear.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
It certainly was a Pyrrhic victory for the Seahawks. However, as they lose both Earl Thomas and Will Disley for the season due to leg injuries, Earl Thomas flipped off the Seahawks sideline as the car took him back to the locker room after his injury. Obviously, a lot more on that front. Is his time up as a Seahawk? Yeah, probably, although it'll be interesting to see if they franchise him to still try to get some value before this is all said and done in a trade. I'll tell you, it's going to go under the radar, but the Will Disley injury is brutal. In some ways, there's a positive out of the Earl Thomas, which is now you can put this entire saga behind you and just remove it from the rest of the season. Will Disley was a breakout player, was having a fantastic year as both a blocker and as a pass receiver as a rookie, and this patella tendon injury is not one that you just bounce right back from. That's a really, really tough injury for a young
player. And go back and watch the first quarter of that game, and you will see Will Disley, I mean, mauling people. Marcus Golden had no chance. He was mauling him at the point of attack. Part of the reason those run plays were 6 and 7 yards is he was just killing the people in front of him, and that's a 270-pound force off the edge. You don't get back. Now, you do get Ed Dixon back. Remember that name? That's the guy that you signed to be the blocker to work with Will Disley. The good news is you should have him back off the pup here in about 2 weeks, but the bad news, yes, for Will Disley, who is having an incredible start to his career, he's going to have an incredibly difficult and demanding rehab coming off of it. And for Earl, he does get what he wants. He's not going to be fined anymore. He gets the rest of his $8.5 million this season. All of that is guaranteed to him. He's going to have the surgery, and then ultimately, I think most of the folks and doctors are going to tell you he should be 100% by the Super Bowl, so he can hit free agency and do what he wants ultimately, and that's to try to get paid and get out of this organization that wasn't going to give him his third deal.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Oh, heck of a day for Jake Browning on Saturday as he becomes UW's all-time leading passer and led the Huskies to a 35-7 win over BYU. Huskies climb one spot to number 10 after probably their best game of the season. Meanwhile, the Cougs improved to 4-1, 28-24. They hold on to beat Utah in Pullman. Jake was really good. I mean, I've been critical of him at times. That was Jake Browning at his best. That was the guy that we saw as a sophomore who led this team to that great record at the beginning of this year, picking apart a defense, incredibly accurate, no mistakes. If that guy continues to show up the rest of this year, the Huskies going to be pretty tough team to handle.
Yeah, that's a win at that point over a top 25 team. Jake completes 92% of his passes. 92% of his passes. And 35-7 doesn't really do the game justice. They miss two field goals. They muff a punt at the end. Chico fumbles the punt and allows BYU to score a meaningless touchdown. Other than that, that game could have been 41-0 over BYU team. Remember, that went to Wisconsin and ended their 43-game non-conference winning streak. And the Cougs, man, wow. Gardner Minshew and crew find a way when it matters. And they get the big play. They get the 89-yard bomb. They run through two tackles, and that defense holds on for a 28-24 win over Utah. A huge win. A huge win that means more than likely you're bowl eligible. You go get a win in Corvallis this week, then you have a bye week. And more than bowl eligible, you're relevant. Incredibly relevant. And good for Mike Leach and his staff that's really brought this team together in ways that I don't think anybody forecasted before the season.
All right, there you go. Three things you need to know. We can also throw in the Mariners ended their season yesterday with the most hollow 89-win season in history. Congratulations to them on their sixth best record ever in the history of the franchise, and yet you missed the playoffs by 10 games.
Amazing.
How's that even possible? I mean, it's really a remarkable and bizarre occurrence. I feel like I said all I needed to on Friday. Still feeling a little weird about the whole thing.
Any response to that?
No.
Okay.
Nobody noticed. Let's talk to Danny O'Neill and place to John Clayton.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, Danny O'Neill.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good, dude. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
How about that game yesterday?
That was something else. They were staring down the gun barrel of one of the more disappointing defeats of the Pete Carroll era as Phil Dawson lined up for what was a 45-yard field goal attempt. And you're staring at the reality that if he makes this and they don't score, the Seahawks don't score, you're going to have lost one of your best players who indicated there was one thing on his mind as he left the field. And you will have been beaten on the road by a winless team that was starting a rookie quarterback. Who, by the way, Josh Rosen looked really good.
Yeah,
his team didn't do him any favors. Josh Rosen played really well. But that's kind of a criticism as well, because a rookie quarterback making his first start who doesn't necessarily handle pressure very well played really well against.
Yeah, it's a funny game. They really did not coach well, I thought, for 58 minutes. They also, you know, obviously had some big mistakes. The two Janikowski misses. They didn't get any pressure on Josh Rosen, and there were a host of other things that they did wrong, but they also did a lot right in that game. You know, they ran the ball really well. Mike Davis ran great. Russell didn't throw for a ton of yards, but actually kind of, you know, didn't turn the ball over and played sort of a vintage Russell game. All in all, a good game or a bad game for them?
It was a push. They honestly, like, you don't feel better about their season than you did going into that game, but you also don't feel worse. You feel that they won one of those games. Look, that's the first time since the Jim Mora quote-unquote era that Seattle has not converted a third down in a game. It's the first time that's happened since 2009. They didn't make a single third down, and you still won. You feel like in a season where a team that's where Seattle is, which is a season that could go either way, for you to get into the playoffs, you need to win a couple games you very could have lost.
Yep.
And that's going to be one that goes in that column. They very easily could have lost it. There's a lot to feel bad about in the game, but ultimately you get to coach off of it and say, phew, glad we won that one.
Speaking of a column, you wrote a good one on Earl Thomas. How much time did that one take you, Danny? Was that an easy write, or is that one that you pondered for quite a while?
No, that took three versions and three different opinions that I kind of worked myself through to kind of see where does it go, because it started out me saying the Seahawks made the right decision, and as bad as that feels and as awful as that feels, and as I got to the end of it, I was like, this is too cold. It's not how I actually feel. Because I do feel a great deal of empathy. Is that Doug's word? I feel empathic about what happened to Earl. Then I went to one about how it's unfortunate that this is where it's going to end, and the last guy, and they all leave bitter, and it's just really... And then I kind of honed it back down and saying, hey, I feel bad for Earl. I really do. As much as I think... That this exposes the really brutal nature of NFL business, because you end up praising a team for using all they can out of a player and then watching him walk away. And look, Earl's made more than $50 million from the Seahawks. He has had an incredible career earnings. At the same time, it's really tough to watch a player leave the field really angry at his employer.
Mm-hmm. You ever seen that? Ever seen that salute to a team in that moment?
Yeah, by the very same team in the very same building. It wasn't after an injury. It was 2013 when Marshawn Lynch had a touchdown that was called back, and then they threw the ball, and Marshawn indicated that there was one play he would have rather run toward Daryl Bevel. So I've seen a bird flown. I've seen someone fly a bird at the Seahawks bench before, yes.
How do they replace these two injuries?
Well, fortunately for both, you have a ready-made answer. Seattle will get its blocking tight end back when Ed Dixon is eligible to return, which will be after the Raiders game. And on defense, you know it's Tedrick Thompson. Now, the question in both cases is how well does that player replace him? The Disley injury is awful because you had a player that was really emerging. And I heard you saying, Brock, I agree with you. I think his absence made a huge difference in the run game after Will Disley went out. On the Seahawks, for the safety side, this future comes a little bit earlier than you would have liked. You would have liked to have a full season, but eventually they were going to have to replace Earl Thomas because they weren't going to pay him. And now we'll watch Tedrick Thompson do that, and we'll see how much of Pete's praise of him has been just the standard Pete praises everybody who steps into a role, and how much of it is that Tedrick Thompson is more equipped to take that job than other safeties they've tried to plug in.
If Reed was still available and hadn't signed in Carolina last week, do you think they would have made another attempt at him?
Maybe, but that means you're flipping Bradley McDougal to free, because Eric Reed is a strong safety. He's not going to play the role that that Earl Thomas was.
McDougal's been really good, hasn't he?
Has.
Yes, he has.
God, their whole secondary really is. I mean, you start looking at, I thought Trey Flowers played a great game, Shaquille Griffin's been great, and Bradley McDougal has been fantastic this year.
Yes, he has, but we're also two drop passes from talking about how Josh Rosen picked them apart and got deep on them a couple
times. Over Earl, by the way.
Yeah, the one was over Earl, but the other one wasn't.
Earl was Robin and just kind of lost sight of it. And then Earl was Robin and kind of lost sight of it on his broken leg. Earl was just kind of a little bit out of it yesterday. You know, it'd have been really interesting had he not gotten hurt, what the conversation would have been, especially Danny, if those balls get caught. But, you know, I'm just curious. The number of times that we have all said, this is not going to end well for the Seahawks. Okay, you don't. John McEnroe. Career, this brash, you know, just never admit any loss, this unbelievable headstrong nature that provided the greatest sports our town has ever known for a franchise. It is not going to end well. But did it have to end this bitterly for all of these guys? Did it have to end this poorly, Danny, from just a relationship standpoint of Sherm and Earl?
It's up to the players. I think that this is the trade-off, to use your father-in-law's line.
Yeah.
This is the trade-off of Pete builds up the individual, he empowers his players. And that is for good, and I think you get a ton of benefits from that. I think it also allows a player who is headstrong and willful to become even more headstrong and willful, and it sets the table for something like this to happen. I think eventually those wounds will heal. If Cam Chancellor had been traded after his holdout, it would have been bitter that way, too. I think long-term the relationships will be repaired, but my short answer is when you empower players in this way, you're also saying that we're going to take the good with the bad, and the bad is seeing players become very bitter because they didn't get what they want and acting out on that.
Impact on this locker room?
I don't think there's going to be much. They still mobbed Sebastian Janikowski after he made the field goal attempt. Like, look, honestly, I think it's a cold business, and I think that they all feel bad for Earl, and they all wish Earl hadn't gotten hurt, and they wish Earl had gotten the big contract before he got hurt. That's not going to change the nature of their business, their ambition, and what they want their season to become.
Danny, great stuff. We'll look forward to Danny, Dave, and more.
No wild card for Danny?
No wild card. Not on Mondays. We don't have time for
that. Oh, that's right. That's right. We got too much.
We don't even worry about that stuff. Danny, thanks for filling in ably. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Great article.
Danny, Dave, and more, of course, today at 3, as it always is. All right. We have the phone lines open here, 206-421-3776. What did you make of the way Earl handled being carted off the field yesterday, the way the Seahawks have handled the situation, and where it all goes from here? Phone lines will be open. More of our thoughts and yours next here on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Bird is the word, Brock. That's what they say. The bird. The bird is the word for Earl Thomas yesterday. That was his word as he chose to leave the field in style. Carted off after a brutal leg injury. Second time he's broken the lower leg on, I believe, his left leg. And as he was leaving, he offered a one-finger salute to what appeared to be the Seahawks sideline cut seven. Pete Carroll wasn't exactly sure where that thing was aimed.
I don't know. Somebody said something. I don't know anything about that. I don't know. It's a big stadium. No, I don't know where it was aimed at. Earl was extraordinarily poised on the field for what just occurred, to be so clear and so resolved to what he knew what happened.
In all fairness to Coach Carroll, I guess it could have been aimed anywhere. It doesn't necessarily need to have been aimed at him, that's for sure.
Right.
But it sure seemed, at least given all of the
big
circumstances,
stadium, right?
to have been aimed at the Seahawks in general. I don't know if it was at John Schneider or Paul Allen or Pete Carroll or just sort of the idea of the organization in general, but that was a pretty powerful, lasting image.
Yeah.
What'd you make of it? And we'll grab some of these calls here in a sec.
Well, what I made of it is that's going to be the image that I'm going to remember a long time. And you're right. In time, I will remember all the great plays. In time, in 25 years, when they celebrate a Super Bowl and they all come back, and they all, I hope they all come back. I would think that they would all come back. I would think there would be enough water under the bridge that even a Brett Favre can get his jersey retired and be in the Ring of Honor in Green Bay. I think you can come back in time, that it heals all those wounds, but not right now. Right now, in that moment, he did have a clear thought. You're right, Pete. He did have a very clear thought, and his thought was still about him and him only. He could care less about you and your organization, and that's what that middle finger said. And
not
that's
right
hard for me to absorb.
Yeah, just not right
yeah,
now.
That's hard
maybe
for me
later,
to absorb.
But
not right now.
Not right now. 206-421-3776. I'll just tell you again, it doesn't bother me. Honestly, that part does not. I'm not easily offended. I'm certainly not offended by that. I think I understand some of the emotion, the fight that he feels like he's been in here for the last close to a year, all ending in exactly what he was afraid of.
Yeah.
Of course he was emotional. Of course a guy who barely keeps his emotions in check to begin with lost it in that moment. And I'm sure, if, you know, Pete's right that beforehand he was poised and this and that. But then in that moment, I'm sure it gets to you. I get it. I'm not mad at Earl Thomas about that. But I also think the Seahawks did the right thing by not signing him to a long-term deal. And this is exactly why. Let's grab Greg on line one on I-5. What up, Greg?
Hey, how's it going this morning?
Good.
Never a dull moment, Greg.
Yeah, no kidding. A few takes. The thing I'll remember about Earl is how focused he was. You're not going to find somebody as focused as he was. He was married to football. It was his wife. The flipping off the sideline is not going to bother me at all because he always speaks his mind. What's on the top of his mind, that's what comes out. But what does upset me is the Seahawks sideline management. Anything from challenge flags to timeouts, really the clock management as well. That really upsets me.
But you don't think they should just blow timeouts for no reason?
He had to go. Once he started going down this line, cracking this door for Salk, he had to go.
Oh. You know, I'm married to football, so when you're married to a person, you take your vows and you treat it right. It's a privilege to be out here.
When they burned that second timeout, Kyle, they got to the line of scrimmage with 4 seconds left on the clock.
Do we have any more calls?
What is the deal? All right, Rich is in Mukilteo. I'm sorry. I'll stay focused.
Focus,
leave
please.
Me alone. Rich is in Mukilteo. What's up, Rich? What do you think of all this?
I think it's, if I was an owner, and Paul Allen's a pretty powerful owner, and you've paid someone $50 million over their career, I'm looking at the long-term effects of now you got this ideology of the players thinking that, you know, no matter what they get paid, it's not going to go well in negotiations. And if I was on the e-board of the players union, I'd be settling this stuff down because it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
It puts a bad taste. And for the timeouts, the Seahawks spend.
Oh, come on, guys. Later.
Rich, please.
The Seahawks spend timeouts like a $20 bill in a teenager's pocket. It's gross.
It's like, look, I'm going to Vegas later today, but I spend my time at Snoqualmie Casino, et cetera. It's like they think the timeouts are chips instead of money. Mm. Like, you get into that environment, you're like, it's another 25
flip
bucks.
Another chip.
It's just a chip. It's not even real money. It's $5.
You know, Rich, you're talking about the player perspective. I think Malcolm Jenkins is a really mature guy. I think he's a tremendous pro. He's a Super Bowl champ in Philadelphia. And he tweets last night to Earl, "We risk it all. We risk it all for our teammates and our fans with little reciprocity.
you know, like those guys from Boston wanted.
At the end of the day, the player shoulders all the risk and all the scrutiny. Where is this? Is this different than the era that I played in 20 years ago? Is it different? Is it different than the era my dad played in college 40 years ago? Is it different? Is it? When did this happen? What do you mean you risk it all? This is a trade. You go out and, you know, you play at a really high level and you're phenomenal. You make $8.5 million, man. That's a trade. Do you want this deal or do you not want this deal? Like, I just don't understand this mentality. No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
They are the only league without guaranteed contracts. They're the only league without guaranteed contracts, and they're mad about it, and I don't blame them. It's not going to change, and I don't think that necessarily it should change, but I don't blame them for being mad about it. NBA player goes out there, no matter what he does, he gets paid an absurd amount of money.
Earl's guaranteed. His money this year is all guaranteed. Every last dollar is guaranteed at the $8.5 million.
Sure,
it's all guaranteed.
But the contracts,
as are the $85 million that Kirk Cousins had, as were all the money that Darrelle Revis had, as were all the money Larry Fitzgerald has signed for. That's what those guys negotiated. That's what they did.
Come on, man. You know that the CBA is not a good deal for the players. You know that.
And it wasn't 20 years ago.
I understand that. But all the other ones are, and the players are getting more and more mad about it. And I don't blame them for being mad that they have a bad CBA. Now, I do think that they're bad. Bad CBA allows their league to flourish as much as it does, and I think there's quite a conversation there. But I understand why they're mad.
Do you not think they're going to find the next player that's going to play? Do you not think they're going to find the next Bradley McDougald? Do you not think they're going to find? Like, do you think the line starts and ends with you? As my producer at ESPN likes to say, some of the best wisdom he got 20 years ago. You want to complain and moan about the games you get, the job you have? Well, look behind you at the line, and you will see that it will not end. There's a thousand people behind you that want to play. There's a whole other league that's starting this winter with guys making nothing and with the hopes to get in this league. Then all of a sudden, Trey Flowers rises up. All of a sudden, Shaquille Griffin rises up. All of a sudden, Bradley McDougald for 3 years. Like, do you think this league is just all about you and there's nobody else, Malcolm or Earl, that can do your job? I'm sorry, this league has found others. Okay, this league will find another Earl. This league will find another young, hungry guy that wants more than anything for his opportunity to play and not make it all only about himself. That's what this league has done for decades.
206-421-3776. Grab Steven and Kennewick. Hi, Steven.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, man.
So I understand where Earl's coming from. I get his anger and everything, but I also think this is going to be kind of an opportunity to see how things respond. Earl obviously is going to come back, and it's going to be funny to see what happens in the offseason. He's going to be a free agent, and if he decides he wants to continue playing, which he's married to football, he probably will. He'll get the surgery. I think it'll be real interesting to see what happens if he gets a call from Sherman and says, hey, look, they'll pay you for great incentives down in San Francisco. Why don't you come join me down here? And then now we're facing a division rival with a lackluster Legion of Boom who's crippled and walking around as a shell of themselves. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't think they made the wrong decision not paying him, but it does suck because he is going to eventually be in that Ring of Honor despite his salute yesterday leaving.
That's how they'll enshrine him. Like, it'll just be a picture of the finger. Instead of like the number 29, it'll just have a big fist.
Hand out Earl Thomas foam fingers. The whole crowd will wave them around.
Are you really that upset about the finger?
I understand, like to your point earlier, I understand where that comes from, but it comes from even in that moment, that it was only about him in that moment. So I totally understand it. It's totally consistent with the last, I don't know, couple years for those guys, and for him in particular the last year.
All right, we got a lot more time to get to these calls. Unfortunately, it's not right this moment because we got a few other things we got to do. So if you're on the line, we'll try to get back to it by 8:30, 9 o'clock. You can call back, whatever you want to do. 206-421-3776. Good calls and a lot of passion, sir.
Or maybe we just do it at 8.
Maybe.
Is there any other takeaways?
Like a million takeaways.
Oh, you do? Oh, we got to get your timeouts.
Got to get to the timeouts.
That's right.
We're going to spend 25
minutes. We got to have our intervention
talking
with
about
Mike.
How ridiculous this timeout thing
no,
is.
No, Mike, we're all going to read the letters we wrote to you about how your fascination with the timeouts has impacted our lives.
How dare you? How dare you, Kyle? I'm coming for you.
Right now.
We know that the Seahawks are going to miss Earl Thomas, but how much are they going to miss Will Disley and where? Brock Scott answers. Blue 42 is next. Then timeouts on Brock and Saul.
Coors.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42. This is where we ask Brock a couple good football questions and get the best answers imaginable. Let's start with the Huskies, Brock.
Yes.
Big win for them, and Jake Browning really played his best. He was nearly perfect as the quarterback in this game. How has he gotten better and improved over the last couple weeks?
I think a couple things. I think, number one, and by the way, 23 of 25. 23 of 25 is hard to do in 7-on-7. It's hard to do in routes versus air. He's 23 of 25 for 277 and a touchdown. And congratulations, Jake. You've already shown you're going to own every single record. You're going to have the most wins. You're the first four-year starter. You're going to own every record in that record book. And this was a win against a top 25 team at home that you took advantage of. I think there's two things in particular that stand out. Number one, you've seen him go away from that retreating. You've seen him actually, I think, a real hyper-focus that when you're going to extend plays, and we talked about this in our ASU game, step up. Step up into that pocket. Find that lane up or find that lane to the side that just when you go backwards, nothing good is going to happen. And ASU a year ago, Stanford a year ago, Auburn this year, those are plays that I think are pretty clear in telling that it's just not going to be the avenue for success. And then number two, he focuses, and I think they have focused with Bush Hamden, on what he can do. Get the ball out of his hand. Find places to get the ball in rhythm out of his hand. Because when he does, Mike, he is unbelievably accurate. You know, in those two things, so those are your marquee points for quarterback, decision-making and accuracy. And when he does not go backwards and retreat and think he's Russell Wilson, his decision-making is pretty good. And, man, when he is on it and they give him an option to get the ball out of his hands, he is incredibly accurate. He certainly was Saturday night.
All right, question number two. From Montlake to Pullman, Mike Leach has the Cougs at 4-1 and really could quite easily be 5-0. I mean, that was a winnable game. Unfortunately, they lost to USC. What's he done? How has this team done this?
You know, I think two things. And for the 18th time, I'll give Tracy Clays a lot of credit and Peyton Palua, their captain and middle linebacker, back for a sixth season. Those guys are playing good enough, solid defense. But this is about Mike Leach saying, the heck with it. I'm not going to run the football. All right, and all of his disciples that are spread all over college football, from Lincoln Riley to Dana Holgorsen, that got top 15 programs, they've diversified their run game. They've done a little bit more. And quite honestly, with a transfer in here, he's got Gardner Minshew for 1 year. And they're, I think, both collectively like, forget it. Why run the ball? Kyle, did they have a rushing yard in the game Saturday afternoon in Pullman?
They finished with zero. They ran the ball, but they finished with zero rushing.
How many rushing attempts did they have, Kyle? They finished with zero rushing yards. So this whole, like, we're going to have balance, and I'm going to find a little more run game. And over the last few years with a four-year starter and Luke Falk, I'm going to take a little off of Luke, and we're going to run it, and we're going to have three running. No, we're not. You know what we're going to do? We're going to throw it every time. And we're going to throw for 500 yards. And Grandpa, don't really care about what my disciples are doing and all my guys all around college football that are doing all these neat things. You know what I'm going to get back to? The very basics and essence of this deal that is an air raid, throw it all over the yard, because I got a guy that can do it. And, yeah, they're not living in balance. They're living in winning right now.
All right, question number three. A lot of talk, obviously, about Earl Thomas, but Will Dissly, the other big injury for the Seahawks yesterday, blocking tight end. How much will they miss Will Dissly?
Immensely. You know, he was growing not only to be just the run blocker, you just saw him developing as a passer. It is, I mean, good. The good news and the only saving grace is Ed Dixon's right there. Ed Dixon's going to be back in 2 weeks. He will be eligible to come off. And remember, you know, we've mentioned his name the first day of training camp. Okay, because he was out there in front of us like, who is that guy? And what is he doing? Well, he's actually working out with the trainers ahead of time because he pulled his groin. He's got issues. And that it continued to be an issue all training camp. Thus, had to go on the PUP and not available for 2 more weeks. So that is the only silver lining, is you do get a guy that has a skill set to block. But you're talking about a 270-pound monster. And do yourself a favor, you football fan. Go back and watch the plays before Will got hurt in this game. Not only some of the previous ones, in this game. And what he was doing to those edge defenders, what he was doing in caving down that side, what he was doing in one-on-one situations, things that Nick Vinette and Luke Wilson and a number of guys through the years, really since Zach Miller, had been unable to do. It's a real, real bummer.
That is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Weird injury, too. It didn't look that bad. I mean, it looked like nothing when it happened.
Yep.
I thought maybe he had fallen on his butt, knocked the wind out of himself or
something
like that.
I thought maybe the shoulder got driven into the ground or maybe the wind got knocked out. But if you went back and rewound it, you saw just that misstep right away. Boom. Yeah. Oh, man, right there. And then to have the patellar, which, you know, we've learned through Jimmy Graham, especially for big men, how just incredibly difficult that rehab is.
Worse than ACL?
These sports doctors tell you that.
Yeah,
because I think the impact then in the thigh and the ACL is so proven, and, you know, they've got that thing, I think, pretty, you know, well-oiled machine as far as all the recovery and that. You just don't see that patellar as much. So that is just, Billy Bozeman, I feel awful for you. Just a real, real bummer. And to see the team just surround him. This is a player that's played four games, right? And you saw that whole team surround him. Quite a testament, I think, to this team and how much they care about one another. And also the impact that he made in a very, very short time.
What is the deal with that stadium?
It's crazy.
It's bizarre. I mean, the Seahawks have had some really great moments there. They have. Beating the Cardinals. And we played a few of them last week with the Marshawn run and the Russell run and the Russell throw to Doug Baldwin, and, you know, there have been some great moments at the stomping down there for you. I mean, they've done some good things.
Yep.
On the other hand, it takes Richard Sherman, it takes Cam Chancellor, it takes Earl Thomas, it takes Will Dissly. I mean, it's bizarre, and obviously took your second Super Bowl.
Yes.
It's amazing.
And
what
you know
a crazy
what?
Experience.
And you and I love golfing in Arizona.
Sure.
I mean, you love just the
ball
warmth.
Goes a long way.
The Bermuda, yeah. But you can't kick. Like, you would think that there's usually a correlation between kickers and golfers. They're usually, like, really good players and like that. And you would think Hauschka couldn't kick in there. And obviously,
the
two veteran guys couldn't kick
in
there
either. And we saw the same thing with that game, the tie, right? Where both teams missed easy field goals to
Hauschka
win that
game. Hauschka had a 26-yarder.
So did was it Catanzaro or whatever? I mean, like, what a bizarre.
What is it about that stadium that you can't kick in it?
It must be all the wind made from the Rascal scooters as the people are driving away.
I guess.
It just, for whatever reason, throws the ball off kilter
or
whatever. All right, coming up next, Brock, it's time for some takeaways. What's going on with the Seahawks running game, and which young player appears to have finally broken out? It's next on Brock and Salk.